Good morning, and apologize for the laughing as we start this meeting. This is House Education Committee, and it is 8:07 on the Friday, March 26th. President and Representative Keller, Munoz, Wilson, Edgman, Book, and myself, Chair Seaton. And today, we're going to take up two items. The first will be House Bill 367, Tax Credits for Educational Contributions. And then we will take up SB 221, Legislative Task Force on Higher Education and Careers. So we have the sponsor with us. We had a number of amendments adopted last time, and we have a CS before us incorporating those. Have you gone over that?
The CS?
Yeah.
Yes, we have. And Kendra will walk you through that.
Staff for Representative Munoz, would you come forward? Good morning. Would you identify yourself on the record?
Good morning. Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Kathy Munoz, and go over the changes there we did. Louie is making copies of the new fiscal note, by the way, so that should be coming to you right now.
Thank you.
I don't think I have this.
And this would be CS version P?
Correct.
Our previous version was E.
Do we have that?
Yes, he's going to give it to us, I guess.
Do you need a new copy?
Yes, I do too.
Do all members have the P version?
P, no, I don't.
CS, it should have come around to your office.
The other day here.
They should have that. It was passed out yesterday.
Well, there are several copies. It's getting toward the end of the session. We'll take just a brief at ease. In order, and we have before us the P version of House Bill 367. And would you go through the changes for us, Kendra?
Yes. So the new version in the CS was the conceptual amendments that we had adopted during, or you had adopted during the last hearing. That was the first one, lowering the cap from $25 million to $5 million. And we added language, which will make sure that we only receive an allowable tax credit of $5 million if they're a part of affiliated group. So just making sure that if there are a number of corporations that are affiliated together, you can't get more than the $5 million. Let me refer you to page 7, section 15. They talk there about the affiliated group, and they also refer to the definition, which we already have in statute, AS 432073.
Okay, so just a second. We had affiliated group here earlier in section 5.
Yes, it's in multiple times in the bill.
Okay, so this is just relating to each of the different taxes again.
Correct.
Okay.
And then the other change that we did was per the Department of Revenue again, which added language to order the education tax credit before any other tax credits except for the gas exploration and development tax, which is already listed in statute as being the first credit application under AS 432043.
Good.
And those were all the changes that we had incorporated. And as I noted before, we do have a new fiscal note, which I believe has made it around to you.
Yeah.
Which it is a zero fiscal note, but the analysis continuation there that Department of Revenue had done incorporated the $5 million change that we had made rather than the 25.
Does anyone have any questions on the CS?
And I believe we do have Robin Wilson online.
Okay, and so just to be sure, I'll move that we adopt CS 367 version P and you objected, and you'll remove your objection.
Remove objection.
Thank you. Just to make sure we had the right version before us. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Robin Wilson on the, or Joanna Bales? I guess they're both on as far as the, as far as this bill. I guess, Robin and Joanna, I'd just like to ask you, is there anything in the way that we've constructed this bill that is going to be difficult for you to administer?
Yes, this is Robin Wilson with the Tax Division. Chairman, there is nothing in the bill that would make it difficult for us to administer.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Wilson had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question about how, I mean, this is quite a bit of a tax break here. How is that going to affect the general fund? Do you think it will affect it very much?
Through the chair, this is Joanna Bales, the Deputy Director of the Tax Division, Representative Wilson. You know, in the fiscal note, if you take a look in there again, with this version, our estimate of what this bill would allow dropped from about $200 million in potential corporate income tax, reduced revenues, to about $131 million. But the reality, as I also mentioned in the fiscal note, is that all taxpayers would have to take advantage of this. And even with the $150,000 credit that they're currently allowed to pay, we only saw 16 taxpayers in the corporate income tax group take that credit. And that's a fairly lucrative credit because it's dollar for dollar on the first $100,000. second $100,000. So our expectation is, even though the bill allows for a significant amount, if everyone took advantage of it, we don't expect that to happen. And it's very difficult, though, for us to tell. But let's say, for instance, that those 16 taxpayers were to take full advantage of this credit, we wouldn't even see that all of those taxpayers could reduce their tax by $5 million because their liabilities aren't even that much. So, you know, it's real difficult for us to estimate exactly what it would be, but it would be definitely less than the $131 million that's identified in the fiscal note.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edman.
And then the corresponding comment to that would be that, of course, all that money would be going to educational institutes providing benefits, and so that's not really quantifiable in terms of what those benefits would be as well.
That's correct. And I just received a printout here that came from the University of Alaska, I believe. And anyway, it's looking at the data of contributions that came into University of Alaska organizations from 93 through 09 and how those are used. So I'll get copies of this made and distributed to everybody so that everybody has that same information. But, so do we have further questions of the Tax Division?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Representative Edmund.
Is a motion in order?
A motion is in order, and unless there is further discussion on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? The sponsor want to make a final wrap-up comment?
Well, thank you. I appreciate the committee reading and understanding the bill and taking time with this issue. And in my own community, I know there's an opportunity here to acquire educational infrastructure at the university to help in the training of more technical, more advanced technicians for the Kensington project. Currently, we can only train Tech 1 positions, but this new equipment would allow Tech 2 and Tech 3, which are higher paying jobs. And it's possible, it's not a sure thing, but it's possible that with this incentive, 50% tax credit, that private investments will be interested in that project. And there are other projects throughout the state, but that's one that affects my community directly, And for that reason, I think this is a really good thing.
Oh, thank you. And I'd just like to state that appreciate the bill. And I know that we have the petroleum technology up in Kenai, although that's not in my district. It's a very vital petroleum process, as I think is what it's called. But I know that they have been facility limited somewhat. And if this helps expand that program for education for Alaskans, for the career tech folks that we need so that Alaskans can fulfill those instead of outside employment. I think that if we have the human resources here with the skills and the capabilities, I think that the companies will employ Alaskans, but if we don't have those skills available. So I appreciate that, and we've just passed this out. So if everybody wants to just take a quick look on the second page of the UA giving, you can see the total amounts that have been in, as well as the approximate from petroleum industry or petroleum organizations. And I would just note that it's interesting that in that there was a large jump in 2008, where we had a high profits and high profits tax, and reducing those things are probably significantly were brought forward there for that additional contribution. So as long as oil prices stay high, there may be a good incentive there for getting things done. Are there any other comments or questions? Representative Edge?
Mr. Chairman, I move committee substitute for House Bill number 367, version P, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes. I move it out of committee.
Thank you.
Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, committee substitute for House Bill 367, version P, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes, will move from committee, and we will take a brief at ease while we sign the paper. We have before us CS for Senate Bill 221. Let me. Do you want to quickly reintroduce the bill, and then I'll open up for public testimony?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Senate Bill 221, in essence, creates a task force to address the disconnect in our educational pipeline in the state, particularly as regards the K-12 system linking with the university post-secondary system. It would create a task force of 18 members from various stakeholders in the state, as well as members of the legislative branch, to in the next year or so try to identify ways to successfully improve the program. And in a very general summary, that describes the bill.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify on Senate Bill 221? Is there anyone online? There's no one online either to testify on Senate Bill 221. We'll close the public hearing at this time. The committee has the bill before them for committee discussion. We have a packet of amendments. Can we just go through the packets, and we'll label the first one, the top one, amendment number one, and that is C.2. Representative Wilson, would you like to move amendment number one?
Yes, I would. I move conceptual amendment number one, and the reason I say conceptual is because on line five, I'm taking out regional education attendance and adding rural. So it'll be...
You want to take it located into?
Oh, in schools, yes. Located. Wait a minute. No, that's fine. In schools located in rural areas, that's fine.
Oh, you're adding, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So let's go let's go ahead and just do it as an amendment to the amendment. It'll be easier.
Oh, okay.
So if you'll move, you move amendment number one, I'll object for discussion. And would you go ahead with the, and that's conceptual amendment number one. So would you move the amendment to amendment number one?
Okay, I move amendment to the amendment, conceptual amendment number one. And on line five, it removes regional education attendance and replaces it with the word rural. So it will read, in schools located in rural areas.
Okay, so I'll object for discussion. We have, does everyone understand the amendment? So the line would read, in schools located in rural areas. I'll remove my objections. Are there any further objections to amendment number one?
Mr.
Yes,
Chairman,
Representative Benjamin. Objection for discussion.
Yes, to the amendment, to amendment number one. I understand where the sponsor is going with the words located in rural areas, but do we want to confine it just to rural? Do we want to have it more in statewide application? Or I guess to the sponsor to help me clear my thinking, I know that the emphasis likely will be in rural, but there might be also some need to apply it statewide as well.
Well, I think that my intention, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Wilson.
My attention or intention was that we can in urban areas, we have the capabilities of broadband and internet capabilities pretty easily. But in some of the rural areas, it's non-existent almost.
Okay, fine. I'm fine then. Thank you.
Okay.
And I think just for clarification, Representative Wilson, you're looking at that broader definition that is used for rural so that not Fairbanks and Anchorage, and those would be probably the only two that are excluded because all the others have small disconnected schools.
I would imagine that it eliminates the rail belt in that area and adds the rest of the state, I guess.
Non-road connected communities might be a more precise definition.
On that point,
Representative.
Yeah. You know, we're asking them, I was wondering about your word determined. Do you mean review, right? I mean, to determine availability seems a little different. I mean, do you want a report on what's available in the state, or do you want something different than that? And if it is just a report, you know, of the rural, it won't make much sense unless it includes the whole thing. In other words, to me, you won't get the context I think you're looking for, where you can say, okay, they have really good service here in Talkeetna, but they have nothing out there, you know. So, in other words, we're looking for data back from this group, you know. So it seems to me like if you specify rural, you may be missing what you're intending. That's just, you know, I'm just suggesting that.
I'd just like to say that my thoughts are going back and forth, and if what we're doing is a report and an assessment of broadband capabilities, you know, we might even within an urban area such as Anchorage, Peters Creek, or I think Peters Creek, no, that's up in your area, but Girdwood or Indian, if there's a school in some other portion there that aren't in Anchorage proper, might have a different area. So Representative Wilson,
I tell you what I'll do. I will withdraw amendment number one to conceptual amendment number one.
It's withdrawn. Okay.
Okay.
And would you like to offer another one, just taking out the entire phrase after schools on that line, so
right.
That.
So I will.
Mr.
Move,
Chairman.
Amendment number two, amendment to the amendment number two, and wait a minute now. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay. And now, what that does on line five, it removes everything after the word schools.
And I'll object this for discussion.
No.
Okay. Continue.
That's good enough. That's good enough.
Okay.
But I'm wondering, we're still not addressing.
We can come to that in a minute. a different subject. Is there any objection to amendment number 2, which removes located in regional education attendance areas from line 5? Seeing none, amendment number 2 passes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Lampkin.
This is Tim Lampkin, for the record, Tim Lampkin. Just for sake of consistency throughout the rest of the bill, when it references the goals of the task force, it specifies in the state or Alaska, so you might consider, with regard to this amendment, at least on line 5, to say in Alaska schools or schools in the state, just as a grammatical matter for consistency.
Okay, and it's conceptual, so they'll sure. they'll add that on sure in draft, I believe, or we can do it here if anybody has. Thank you for pointing that out. And Representative Wilson or Keller, did you want to offer anything?
I'd like make a friendly amendment to the amendment to change the word determined to review. It's consistent with the way I was thinking in 8. Look at number 8. They're reviewing the graduation rates and going to give us a report.
And which yeah. which page that's, and line?
I'm sorry, page 4, line 4, where it says, you know, I mean, they use review. I mean, it's consistent with other places, and I think it says, you know, but that, you know, just suggesting that.
Number 7 uses the word determine.
Yeah. Yeah. Either way. Whatever. Just a little clear to me, but. Hey, that's the fine points of the English language, and I'm a carpenter.
they also use the word identify. Identify the availability of broadband and internet capability. I'm open to. I would say. There's another one that says compile research. review.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Edgman.
I'll be the arbiter in all this. I think it's fine. I mean, it's.
I'll withdraw.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I've argued.
This is discussion on the amendment. We've adopted amendment number 2, and we have the conceptual amendment number 1 before us. Is there further discussion? And I objected to the amendment. I'll withdraw my objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number 1, conceptual amendment number 1, has been adopted. If we'll look the next page, we'll have that as it's C.5, and that'll be labeled as amendment number 2. And I will offer amendment number 2, which changes on page 4, line 11, deletes March 1st, 2011, and inserts April 1st, 2011.
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
And we have an objection for discussion. When we talked about this, the question was, were we trying to rush things? There'll be new education committee meeting. They might have some input. It's a fairly short window of time, and so this just gives us one more month before the report is due. And so that was my intention behind this, not to delay it, but just to give enough time for the task force and the staff to write a report to submit.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Edgman.
May we hear from the sponsor staff on this?
Sure. Mr. Lamb?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens is perfectly agreeable to changing the date of the deadline.
And then my follow-up would be that the staff of the education committees essentially would be doing the work compiling the report. Is that correct? So I guess just for discussion purposes, you know, you can be working up until March, as the bill currently is now, or April, but you're still going to be within the confines of session.
I'm sorry, I missed the last phrase. I didn't quite hear you.
Well, you're still going to be within session, whether it's March 1 or April 1. So your staff are still going to be putting in extra hours writing this report, ostensibly during the 2011 session, whether it's March 1 or it's April 1. So I guess my comment to you, Tim, would be, does it make much of a difference?
And that was Representative Edgman?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman.
Mr. Lamb.
Extra month is to certainly makes a good amount of difference. I think if you really wanted to have an impact, at least to help the staff, we might consider making it May 1st. However, again, considering the fact or the likelihood that the result of the task force will be some legislation, perhaps some budget items, and obviously April 1st would be too late to address any budget items, but even if we introduced a bill, say April 5th, it's not going to really be taken up until the following session. So either way, a May 1st deadline, there can still be legislation drafted, not officially submitted, but it could be vetted throughout the interim to be taken up immediately at the beginning of the next session. So in that regard, I would propose considering a May 1st deadline. But
Representative Pook.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that point, I would resist that, in that I would like to see the report given to the legislature. And if you're talking about a May 1st, then that opportunity would be lost. So if it was mandated that the report be completed by April 1st, it would seem to me that that's the last opportune time for that kind of distribution. So I would purport that the latest date be April 1st.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, if I might follow up, I want to make it clear that I certainly am confident that as staff we can pull it off by April 1st, but it would be less burdensome as May 1st for reasons stated, but we can certainly do this by April 1st.
Representative Edgman, did you have?
I don't have a specific proposal, but I just recall, Mr. Chairman, that we did talk about, and I think Mr. Lampkin led the discussion the last time around about May 1st, maybe, you know, if we're going to extend it to April 1st, maybe just to go all the way to May 1st to give that additional time. But there does appear to be sort of some pros and cons doing that.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
I feel that, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would rather have it go back to February 1st, because then they know that they've got to work on it and get it done probably before session. And I know that that doesn't give them much time, but I think it would be better for staff during session, it's going to be very difficult because there's so many other things going on. And I think that we want to have it so that we can discuss it. If there's going to be bills, that at least we have them introduced so that they're in our system, so that we can, you know, at May 1st would be just totally, we wouldn't be able to get them in the system or anything. And I think that the bills need to be in the system so that we, if we need to talk about them and discuss them during the interim, with the only 90 days, that's, we don't have much choice but to do that. And so I feel pretty strong that we need to have the bills introduced before we leave session.
Representative Edgman.
I was just thinking, if we gave the staff a tax credit, maybe they'd get it done. But the wrong committee, sorry. I'm fine either way, Mr. Chairman, after hearing the discussion.
Okay. Thank you. And we are joined by Representative Gardner, full committee. So is there further discussion on amendment number 2? I offered amendment number 2, and who objected? Did anybody? Representative Benjamin.
Chairman, I'll remove my objection.
Is there further objection to amendment number 2? Seeing none, amendment number 2 is adopted. If we'll turn to C.4, and we will label that amendment number 3, and I'll move that amendment, and that is to page 3, lines 6 through 10, we're deleting the current language and inserting new language that says, the chair of the House committee having jurisdiction over education and the chair of the Senate committee having jurisdiction over education shall serve as co-chairs of the task force. The co-chairs shall call the first meeting of the task force not later than 30 days after the effective date of the act. The members of the task force shall elect other officers as needed to conduct businesses of the task force. Do we have an objection to that?
For purposes.
For discussion?
For discussion, I object.
Representative Munoz objects for discussion. And what we've done here is just take it from designate the House committee chairman shall call the first meeting, and then everybody will elect the chairman, to having the two bodies, the chairman of the House and Senate education committees would serve as co-chairs, just to make sure that we don't get any squabbling or anything else between the two bodies. And I think this is going to be a very cooperative effort, and we want to make sure that it stays on the radar screen that way. Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you've run this by the other body? Is he agreed to be roped into this on that timeline?
We have the sponsor of the bill from the, and it is a Senate bill, so and they've had this amendment. So, Mr. Lampkin, do you want to address that?
Sure, thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stevens is agreeable to increasing the size of the task force, and certainly we feel it's probably a good idea that the legislators themselves serve as co-chairs. We would like to offer perhaps something else to consider, which relates specifically to this amendment and the one that's next on our list here, and that would be to perhaps consider still having two members from each body, but rather than specifying that they be the chair of the education committee, for purposes just stated by Representative Book, perhaps they don't. The other body doesn't. Perhaps they don't want to do it. Also, the fact that we have currently two co-chairs on the Senate side, so we have three standing co-chairs of education currently. This amendment would accommodate both those co-chairs, but it's which one do we pick?
Well, I think we're on to a different amendment. This is C.4, which only looks at the chair. It doesn't look at the increasing the membership of legislators.
So specifically to this amendment, considering we're in election year and the possibility, if not likelihood, that the current sitting chairs of education may not be the chairs next year, it's kind of problematic, and such that the counter proposal would be to have two and two, have them appointed specifically by the speaker and the president. That way, assuming if it's a current sitting chair, that person could still continue to be co-chair of the task force next year. Now, that may muddy the waters perhaps too much, but
I think what I'd like to do is do this amendment. If we adopt an amendment subsequent that modifies this or that changes this, we can do that. But I don't want to mix two amendments in at the same time. We will add confusion. So is there any objection to adopting this language? It's simple. And all this does is takes the designation of who's going to call the first meeting and sit as the chair, and then there would be a single elected chair, to saying that the Senate legislator, actually it says the chair of the jurisdiction, but the Senate and the House members will serve as co-chairs. And we can get to that other point in a moment. Oh, yes.
Okay. To the other point, I had an idea, but
okay. Let's try and take care of this amendment first. We can modify it with a subsequent amendment.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just to cover some ground that I brought up at our last hearing on this bill, the whole notion about possibility of a designee of the House Education Chair. I mean, we're going to have a busy summer and fall coming up, and it may be that both the co-chairs cannot meet this rigorous schedule, and I just wanted to make sure that we have satisfied that it may be somebody other than the chair of the committee, the vice chair, for example. Is that properly designated? And I guess I'm going to answer my own question by saying yes, but I at least want to raise the point to get a confirmation on that.
And I guess, you know, we have also established in this bill that the staff are going to be the staff of the task force. And if we get into the position of saying that some other legislator is going to control the staff of the someone else's staff, we're getting problems. I mean, we could build in real problems. And so I think that we can put in other language that says that if someone is unable to serve, we can do that conceptually, that the presiding officer could appoint a replacement. Would that take care of your, and then that person's replacement staff would serve as a staff on that?
Well, I only, Mr. Chairman, raise this level of concern because this is a resolution.
No, this is a bill.
Okay. It is a bill, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It feels like a resolution.
Representative Wilson Nembu.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you saying that you don't want somebody else giving Louis orders?
Well, the effectiveness of having that would not be very effective. So we would have to, you know, make sure that we get that verified or figured out. So, Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just looking at amendment number 3, the language on line 10, the last sentence. And I was wondering if this caretakes for that need.
I believe, Representative Book, that other officers as needed to conduct the business would be if you needed somebody coordinating transportation, or if you had somebody, subcommittees that were going to be working on something, or vice chairman, or I don't know exactly what that is set up there for. I haven't seen it necessitated in other task force. I don't think that this would serve for the replacement of a legislator as co-chair. I don't think that the language would there, because then you'd have the task force itself trying to designate a legislator that wouldn't be on the task force until. So I don't think that that solves the question that come up. Mr. Lampkin, did you have a comment on this?
Through the chair, a couple points being made here. First, I want to try to clarify that on page 3, line 3 and 4 of the bill, I think it's clear that.
Just a moment. Okay. Representative Edgeman, did you have the objection to the amendment?
No.
Okay.
I did.
I guess you did.
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure. Go ahead. Mr. Lamb.
Two or three points made there. First, page 3, lines 3 and 4, I believe it's stated clear that the staff of the legislative members of the task force shall serve as staff of the task force. So if there's a replacement of a legislator, there's also going to be a replacement of the staff. I don't believe that there's going to be any crossover or who's the boss of who. So I think we're covered there. With regard to officers, I think, Mr. Chairman, you're right on point with it is a large task force, and so that gives the chair the ability, or the task force itself, the ability to sort of delegate duties off things, perhaps administrative things, travel, arranging travel, or printing projects and so forth. That I think was the purpose of the reference to officers. The original language makes it flexible. They may decide that they don't need that. But the amendment reinserting it says that they shall make the officers. So I guess it's the will of the committee how rigid you want to make it, shall versus may, but that's just something I'd like to point out.
Line 6 through 10.
excuse me, I misspoke. They both say shall, so I guess you might consider some flexibility there to make it may.
And I think that's a good suggestion, so I will, well, it's as needed. It just says who will do them as needed. Representative Book, do you have any questions? Any
the language of that sentence, I believe, gives a enough leniency when you say as needed. You're giving a means by which you can determine. So whether it says shall or may, I don't think that really changes much of the directive. But I was just looking at a means by which we can address what Representative Edgeman's concerns were, which are very poignant regarding opportunity, you know, opportunity to have a task force chaired by the appropriate legislators. So I understand that your commitment on this and if there'd be a way to build in some flexibility for that, I think that it would probably be appropriate. How to do that?
I mean, we can take this to a different. It is here on the chairs, and that's what we're talking about. So, if we want to take it and so that it isn't necessarily the committees that have jurisdiction over education, and we want to leave it up to the presiding officers to appoint someone other than the chairs of the committee having jurisdiction, the committee can make that determination. Seems to me that it seems to me that we've had a determination through the legislative process through the selection of the committee chairs on each side and through their serving of a year or two on these issues that the committee chairs are probably, since those are the committee of jurisdiction, it makes the most sense to have them as the chairs. If somebody wants to have somebody else, that's, you can make that amendment, or we can have another amendment that says that if the committee, the chairs of the committee of jurisdiction are unable to serve, that the presiding officer shall appoint another member to serve as that body's chair. Does that satisfy
everyone?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to make a conceptual amendment to amendment number 3, and this would add at the end of this section that if the chair of either committee of jurisdiction is unable to serve, that the presiding officer of the body, of the relevant body, may appoint another member to serve, another legislative member to serve as the co-chair. And that's a conceptual amendment. And I'd offer that as conceptual amendment number 1. Do we have objection for discussion?
I have objection to it because I think you can do it with the way it's worded there. The members of the task force shall elect other officers as needed. So if one of them says, I don't want to do it, then elect somebody else.
And Representative Wilson, the problem is that what we have is staff members. And if they would elect a co-chair who is not a member of the legislature, not representing the House, we wouldn't want to have somebody trying to direct staff of the legislature who's not a member of the legislature, and they wouldn't have their own staff. That member of the legislature wouldn't have their own staff to pull on board.
Okay,
Representative Benjamin.
And I support the amendment to amendment number three, and I think the other purpose of this amendment, of course, is to address the discussion about legislative buy-in that we had. So if I think both chairs are from the respective education committees, or, you know, if it's someone else, because the co-chairs are unable to serve, then it still serves or accomplishes the purpose we want it to accomplish.
Representative Wilson, do you still object to...
I'll remove my objection.
To the amendment, to the amendment.
But now that we have that on there, we do have to, because...
Wait, just a minute. Do you remove your objection?
Yes, I do.
Is there any other objection to amendment number one, to amendment number three, which is conceptual and says that if one of the co-chairs is unable to serve, that the presiding officer of that body will be able to appoint another member to serve as the co-chair?
Of the legislature.
Yeah, the presiding officer of the House, House of which that person was a member. That's the conceptual amendment. Okay, so we've adopted that. Now we are on to amendment number three as adopted.
I have one other point that I wanted
Munoz.
To raise. I think the intention is to have two chairs. Is that correct? And in the Senate, there are already two chairs, two co-chairs, so we might want to add language to line 7 at the end, add designated co-chair of the Senate committee, so that you don't, in effect, have three co-chairs. Or I don't know if it's necessary, but I think Tim raised the point.
Well, I think that's maybe covered in the next amendment there, but and that would be up to the presiding officer to appoint which co-chair would serve as the co-chair of the task force. Is that the sponsor's understanding as well?
For the record, Tim Lampkin, through the chair, to clarify what we're proposing, to try to keep it simple here, would be that the presiding officer of each body appoint two people. One of those people would be designated as the co-chair of the task force. Yep. And if there is a vacancy in either of those positions, it would be reappointed by the presiding officer. And that keeps it pretty simple. Okay. It's assumed that one of those members would be, at least one of them would be, if not the chair, at least a member of the respective education committees.
That's fine. I withdraw the idea. Okay. It wasn't a motion.
Thank you. So we have amendment number three before us. As amended, Representative Munoz, I believe you objected.
I remove objection.
Is there any further objection to amendment number three as amended? Seeing none, we have amendment number four before us, which is C.3. And so they're a little confusing. So that's number four. And I'll move amendment number four, which is on page 1, line 11. Deleting 18 members and inserting 20. And then on page 2, lines 19, insert a new paragraph to read, one member of the House of Representatives appointed by the Speaker of the House and one member of the Senate appointed by the President of the Senate.
I object.
Okay, so we have objection from Representative Wilson for discussion.
And I think you need to make this a conceptual amendment, because you're replacing 13 and 14. And
no, that's fine. I'll make that as a conceptual amendment. Okay.
Does he remember the longer ago?
Okay. So, and this is to get to the question of having two more members from each legislative body. There has been a discussion by the staff of the sponsor as whether we want to have this to be two members of each house appointed instead of having the chairman of the respective bodies being one person to serve as the co-chairs and just having a blank that the presiding officer will appoint two members of each body and they'll select who will be the chair. There's that possibility as well. So,
I remove my objection.
You're moving your objection to number four. So we will, is there anyone else that has objection to number four? Okay, so we adopted number four. And then we have number five, which is a conceptual amendment to specify the chair of the education committees at the time of the effective date of the bill may retain their seats on the task force through the term of the task force. Yes, Representative Gardner objected for discussion.
Thank you. And I really just have a question. If the chair isn't reelected, do we need to put into statute what happens then, or can we just have the fallback for the original appointment?
I think it would be pretty obvious. I mean, the intent of this is that that would serve as a legislative person. If the chair was not reelected, they would no longer be a legislator, would not have staff, and so then we would have the presiding officer of that house would appoint a new chairman.
Then I'll remove my objection. Just wanted clarification.
Yeah. I still...
Okay, and Representative Wilson object for discussion.
Yes. But wonder if in this whole process, say you were the education chairman, but in the new organization, you weren't the chairman. And I was on the committee with you because there's two people from the House. And now it's going to be that I have to drop out so that the other chairman of the education committee gets on and you get to stay. I mean, I'm just saying that there is a possibility that that could happen. Yes. And I would say, oh, I hate to leave the committee. But it's going to say which one of us leaves.
Well,
or the task force. So, that's a very, that's a very possible situation. Mm-hmm. You know.
And Representative Wilson, this was meant to be permissive and not general, because if you have a new committee that comes on, the chairman of the education committee might want to pick up three quarters of the way through and be responsible for the report and do all that stuff, or they might not. So the intention here was just to make sure that since it mandates that the chair of the education committee shall be the co-chairs, that this means that midstream you don't have to change, but you could change. So the intention is that if Representative Gardner or Edgman are the chairs of the education committee, that they could take that responsibility. But if they didn't want to pick it up three quarters of the way through, hadn't served on the task force, their staff wasn't familiar with it, this just gives permission for the bodies to maintain that continuity through the writing of the report.
I remove my objection.
Does the sponsor have any problems with this? And it is, again, meant to be permissive, and so that the new chairman of the jurisdiction would have the opportunity, if they wanted to, because that's what the statute says, but this just gives the opportunity so that they may retain that person if they want, if the body wants to. Mr. Lampkin.
Through the chair, this is Tim Lampkin, Staff Center Stevens. We're agreeable to how you would like to structure it. However, I've stated, I think, fairly clearly our suggestion to simplify this.
Are there further Let's see. Well, Representative Wilson, you had the objection.
I removed it.
You removed your objection. Did somebody, nobody else objected. Amendment number five is adopted. Do we have further amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Keller.
I would like to move amendment number six, but I want to do some explanation first. If I could, but not about the amendment, but just why I'm doing it now.
Don't have it.
Just a minute.
Conceptual, yes. Yeah.
Okay, this is a verbal amendment. Okay. So let's not move the amendment yet, but let's go to committee discussion and Representative Keller.
Thank you. Yeah, I just first of all wanted to say that Tim came to my office, asked if I had any questions. I had none. and this didn't hit me until I got here today. I apologize. And I offered in the spirit of being a clarifying amendment, even though it'd be, well, I'll explain just a little bit, a clarifying amendment. And because it's late in the hearing of this bill, I understand any opposition, you have strong veto power here, but I think it's an important one. And what it's based on is, can I just tell you what it is first? And then so I'd like to move the amendment. And then if there's objection, I will.
Go ahead and I'll object for discussion.
Okay. The conceptual amendment is on page two, line, no, page four, I'm sorry. Page four, line seven.
Page four, line seven.
Add a subparagraph there, number nine, and renumber accordingly. But review completion rates for career skill certification programs.
Mr. Chair?
Desegregated by program and campus.
Say that again, Mark.
Review completion rates for career skill certification programs.
Are we under discussion, Mr. Chairman?
We are. I'm just, maybe we should, can we copy that so that?
Yeah, sure. Mind. The idea is, while he's copying, is just that, remember the discussion about what an associate degree is, and the uniqueness of Alaska, what we've done in our, as I understand it, and I may have a limited understanding, but all of our campuses in the community colleges, there's a lot of different programs that are 12 months, 18 months, whatever. They're not aimed at a degree. They're not aimed at necessarily at graduation. And what happens is, I think, is we get a really low grade, and this is partly superstition on my part. I couldn't prove this if I had to. We get a low grade on the completion rates because those aren't taken into account. And I'm thinking that the task force will look at this, but by specifying it in here, it'll give us information back on how many programs there are out there. That's what I'm trying to do, and what the graduation rate is, So it's interesting, just today, as long as we got a little bit of time and I got the podium here, there's been a discussion about the National Governor Association has released some standards for, they've gotten together 48 states and they have proposed standards for education, and that's kind of a talk out there. And here's one of the comments. Opponents say that Alaska kids in schools, especially those in the bush, are different. The state's dropout rate is double the national average, and the state's state rates last, our state rates last in the number of ninth graders who will likely have a bachelor's degree in 10 years, according to the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. And personally, we have a different situation. We are unique up here, and I kind of resent anything that suggests that rural students can't do as good. And I think they're doing better than what we think they are. And I think that this skill certification programs might be an indicator of what our university system is doing. And that's why I would like this task force to review that information and get it back to us so we can have it to compare. Even if it isn't apples to apples, we can compare what's going on in those programs.
And I objected to amendment number six for discussion. And can you differentiate between page four, line five there, and what we have here on line six for me?
Well, in my mind, Mr. Chair, the graduation rates of the that's talking about graduation rates, and I considered changing that wording so that it was graduation rates and certificated completions or something. And then I thought, well, why not just put a different, you know, a whole different bullet in there, just to kind of acknowledge to the task force that the education committee is interested in that. But that's, I think right now it's the concept I have just described could get lost, because I don't think it's a vocational training program. Is there graduation? Maybe there's something I don't know. But when they take a technical training program that is a 14-month course, I mean, do they graduate with the go through a ceremony like the rest of the students? And is that considered to be an associate degree? If it is, then I would withdraw my amendment. But I'm under the impression that it's something different.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner and then Book.
Thank you. A question and a suggestion. You read something about the 48 states in agreement. Can you tell us where that was from?
Yes.
That you were reading?
Thank you. It was Megan Holland.
Anchorage Daily News?
It's interesting. One of the standards is that they have to be able to read Steinbeck by middle school. And that's Mark Twain, Tom Sawyer. I think we all did it before that. I'll bet you. Everybody in here. But anyway. I'll find the first page here. I'll have the information. Megan Holland published March 25th last modified. So it must be, would that be a blog?
I don't know.
I'd be more than happy to give copies.
Thank you.
If Louie doesn't mind.
The copies. And if I might, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gardner.
Make a suggestion that we might be very clear if, instead of the proposed amendment, the language of proposed amendment number six, on line eight, after or before post-secondary, we simply wrote in completion of. So it would mean prepare for the legislature a set of written recommendations to improve remediation, retention, and graduation rates at colleges, universities, and completion of post-secondary vocational and technical training programs. So that would be a graduation, certification, whatever identifies at that program.
That'd be fine with me. The only other added piece that I would like to include in here that they would look at is be able to break it down by campus, because I think you'll find that community college and some of the more rural parts of the University of Alaska may have different results, and it'd be good for us, I think, to know that.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Gardner, and then Book, following up on the same thing, and then Book and Munoz.
So suppose a student starts out at UAS and does 3 years and then goes to UAA for a semester and then drops out. Who gets the ding? Or the student completes at UAA and it's only a quarter of their thing, but UAA gets a completion rate and UAS they didn't complete. I mean,
can I respond?
That was a question, yes.
Yeah, sure. I would think wherever they graduated, and I think it also accent one of the issues I hear raised often, and that is transferability mm-hmm. of the credits. So that's part of my
yes.
reasoning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You raise an interesting point. I do have some experience in this. As far as the union programs are concerned, they do matriculate. If you do an apprenticeship program, you are given credit, and that goes directly to university, and you're given like 35 credits for a degree upon completion. Now, other programs are starting to do that. One in MATSU, if you go through their two-year refrigeration program, then you know, those also transfer because it's part of the system. Not everybody does that. So it would be interesting to get all of the information. But carrying it a step further, it would be interesting to see the success, not just the certification, but whether or not these people get jobs. I mean, that's where we're going here, isn't it? I mean, this is what we really want to know. If all of these efforts are actually producing people, workers, giving them opportunities. So I'm not throwing this into your amendment or whatever, but I mean, if the task force is looking for information that's pertinent, that is the goal, I think, is to see what have we done and what can we do to improve that to get people jobs and working. So,
can I respond, sir?
Yes.
That thought crossed my mind. I mean, that's what this is all about. However, we haven't heard from the sponsor's representative yet.
Right.
But I was just thinking of the size of the task, and if we go too far here, we're going to... But I just think that this will be covered anyway, and by clarifying it, it'll help them organize their work. That's what I was thinking.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Booth.
Right. What you've asked in your amendment is going to be expansive. We have undertaken to do these kinds of things and studies, and there is a significant cost to doing that. But just for your edification, and I commend your view here. Just that I know what it costs. We've done that. So thank you.
And I do feel really strongly that we ought to do it if it costs more, even, because I think that the legislature some time ago directed the university to go this way, and I think measuring it is an important thing to do.
Representative Munoz?
Well, I support the idea. I think intuitively we know that a lot of progress has been made in career tech programs throughout the state, but we were really concerned when we saw the statistic last week, I think it was, that we were 50th in community college completion rates. So I think what Representative Keller is trying to do is to assess the voc ed programs around the state that really in Alaska are equal or similar to a community college type program outside. So for that reason, I support the amendment. And I also agree with Representative Gardner in her idea, but I think the idea that she offered is really distinct to what Representative Keller wants to do, and that is how to improve voc ed graduation rates versus how do you quantify what we're doing in the state. So I support both ideas.
And Representative Keller, in number 8 there, if it said post-secondary vocational or technical training and certification programs, would that get to where we wanted to go, or is that?
Mr. Chair, it'd get part way there, you know, and the other half that I kind of hang on to is the figuring out where these programs are and how they transfer and how they compare. But if that is a burdensome item, I am not trying to slow this bill down, and I don't want. I'll withdraw, first. But that is the second thought that your suggestion does not include. So.
Okay, Representative Keller, my question here is this: this is only training programs or only career readiness programs that offer a certificate are the only ones that I see that this amendment would quantify, whereas in 8 we're talking about vocational technical training and certification programs. So we could have those other training programs, whether they come out with a certificate or not, whether they're completions. I mean, I don't know if certification and graduation, and we're splitting hairs here. I think we're talking about completion of training programs, completion of certification. Most of the time, I think if somebody goes through a training program, whether it's IT and you're getting certified in Microsoft, whatever, or if you're going through and doing a welding, that the institution, after proceeding with all that training, is going to make sure that you have a certificate.
Right.
So that there's something that comes out of there, and it's not just classes you take and then you're on your own. But I just want to clarify is exactly what we mean here. Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Department of Labor requires certification to make it if you're going to institute a program in the state of Alaska and you're going to call it a vocatech program, whatever, you have to have certification, and that has to be done through the Department of Labor in the state of Alaska. So that is being done, but is there a review to the point? I support the amendment.
And I just want to get clarification. So the program designated by program and post-secondary campus, so that would pretty well cover everything, whether it's a internship or a, what do you call them? Apprenticeship.
Apprenticeship, right.
Or those kind of things as well. That's included. Mr. Lampkin, did you have, for the sponsor, any thoughts on amendment number 7?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. We're agreeable to this language. It certainly, if it helps provide focus to the task force, and by all means, let's give them some of that focus. You can see now how we're just at the tip of the iceberg here, the complexity of the issue we're talking about, and that's the purpose, the reason why we're establishing a task force to launch these discussions.
Sure.
I think it's safe to say that the task force will definitely be taking up these issues, and whether or not we specify it is fine, but they will go there, I'm sure.
One last comment.
Representative Keller.
If I were to be on this task force, the first thing I would do is go back and get the minutes and to get ideas. And I think that, frankly, what we put on the record will help. But I do think that I still think the amendment's a good one. So.
Any further discussion on amendment number 6? I objected. I'll remove my objection. Are there any other further objections? Seeing none, conceptual amendment number 6 is adopted. Do we have further amendments? I had discussed with Mr. Lampkin the trying to get some focus in the bill so that as this goes forward, there's a little more direction than, what career readiness is. Are we only talking about high schools? Are we talking about education of our broader community? And that we have a task force on higher education. Again, our GPS scholarship solely focused on high school students. And yet we have a lot of non-traditional students. So I was trying to figure out where we were, because on the purpose of the task force, it says on page 1 here, an advisory task force on higher education and career readiness is established in the legislative branch of state government for the purpose of compiling data and advising the legislature on matters pertaining to college and career readiness of students who graduate from public secondary schools in the state. And I want to make sure that that is the purpose that is going to be assigned to this task force. Reading that, it is fairly narrow to me. It's talking about high school, public school graduates. And K-12 high school, that's it. And I'm not sure if the task force on higher education should be that restrictive, because we have a lot of non-traditional students. Most of the people that are going for certificates from Mr. Book's area are probably non-traditional students. They're probably not students who graduate from the public secondary schools in the state. So is the intention of the committee to have the task force focus on college and career readiness of students who graduate from public secondary schools in the state. Well, if you look on page one, it says that the purpose of this is of compiling data, not line nine, the purpose of compiling data and advising the legislature on matters pertaining to college and career readiness of students who graduate from public secondary schools in the state. And we've had a lot of conversations here. Whether we're talking about graduates of secondary schools, but if we're talking about people that are going into petroleum technology, if we're talking to people that are going into electrical engineering, if we talk about people in that are going into many, they're not coming necessarily as public high school students. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of this task force is there by what we have here is limited to students who graduate from public secondary schools in the state. And, you know, as someone who is looking at this as far as what the goals are and the purpose, I want to make sure that those are coordinated, because if we assign a task force out of here and expect one thing and tell them to do something else, and I asked Mr. Lampkin to see if he could come up with some language for us to say, you know, what is the definitional purpose of this task force? Because if we don't have any defined purpose, the task force should go in just a myriad of directions. So we need some defined purpose and task. But I want to make sure that it's the task that the committee and the sponsor is actually wanting. So let me go to Mr. Lampkin first so he can.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, for the record, Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Again, this is perhaps addresses just the tip of the iceberg as to what this task force is going to be grappling with, and definitions of things like career readiness is one of them. That's why we had to call it at ease. I was scrambling to produce some language for you. You'll see, I think we've passed out some language from a Nebraska summit that happened. That was the most recent event I could find. I didn't want to go too deep into the past, but it's important here that we keep in mind the overall view here of the task force. Senator Stevens presented this bill based on the book Crossing the Finish Line, where the most shocking statistic that he read was that some only 60%, less, in fact, 52% of our students in the state are actually graduating from college. So it's really here, it's the K-12 system and the university system. There's the disconnect between the two. When students show up for college, they're not ready for college level work. They are needing more and more remedial coursework in writing, reading, and math. And we're trying to identify why that is. And also, once they're in college, they're dropping out for various reasons, and we're trying to identify why that is. Why aren't they finishing? So it's not just a matter of the remediation. That's just one component. It's also counseling, financial aid, assessments. Clearly, not everyone needs to go to college. We don't mean to suggest that everyone that goes to high school should go to college or tech school, so forth. It's some people, it's just not their thing. Or life happens. Family, health, so forth. Specifically with regard to reference to career readiness, that language was specifically put in on the Senate side to make it clear that we don't want to just focus on universities. We want to also focus on any post-secondary institution that would include career and technical. The current vernacular in the industry is not to use the word vocational, but rather career and technical. Nonetheless, what we want to see is, in part, or improve rather, is in the K-12 system, when a student finishes high school, they are ready to either go right into college and start taking courses that will result in a degree, and those courses do not need remediation, or Voc Tech School, or to enter the workforce. Let's say, for example, top of my head, administrative assistants, maybe an internet company, those types of things, to have the basic skills needed to be a productive member of the society. Reading, writing, math is the core. And so as a general summary, that's how I humbly submit a rudimentary definition of career readiness.
Thank you. And you all have that before you. It was late in the...
On short notice, Mike.
On short notice, it was, yes. I appreciate you pulling that out. What I'm trying to do is make sure that this task force has a legislatively mandated mission. And I want to make sure that the purpose, you know, we will be compiling research and on best practices and all, but I want to make, and there's some of these things like on page 3, line 24, or 25, where we're talking about career readiness and color from those that graduate from public secondary schools in the state. And maybe that is the focus, is that this task force is to look at K-12 production of career readiness, and that is the intended focus. It's not on looking at non-traditional students. The non-traditional students aren't included in this purpose. And I don't know if the sponsor intended it to be that way, but I just want everyone to understand that that's what we have before us. And so if we pass this out this way, the committee chairs are probably going to be trying to fulfill the purpose of the legislature in passing this. So I want to make sure that the mission of the task force is defined enough so that the co-chairs and the task force are not inventing things for themselves. Yes, and I know you need to leave, and Representative Booth.
Thank you. I believe, looking at the language and the structure, the attempt is to see what is going on in the state. I believe that with the amendments and what we've looked at, it will include the successes of those non-traditional students in those post-secondary endeavors. So it looks like that's comprehensive to me. And I look forward to joining in this and give my support to this bill. I got to go.
Representative Edmund.
Yes, and I have full confidence that my education chair would not reinvent the wheel or would not go beyond the intent of the bill where he'd be serving on this committee. but I, in all seriousness, you know, obviously the task force has a large workload in front of it. It's looking at many items from a macro point of view. I think that were there to be some things that there's always going to be more we could add into this, and certainly both the House and Senate now have education committees that could maybe take the report a step further and help delineate some of the findings and so forth. And Mr. Chairman, if I could, on behalf of Representative Gardner, who had to leave, she asked that I read a question into the record that to the bill sponsor staff. And Representative Gardner's question is that she doesn't really see anything this task force will do, ask, or learn that could not be done by the education committees, jointly or individually. What will the task force do that we, in parentheses, the education committees, shouldn't do ourselves? And that's to the bill sponsor staff. And I can hand this to our recording secretary if she to help her transcribe that.
Mr. Lampkin, you want to address
sure.
the question?
Oh, through the chair, Representative Gardner, Representative Edgman. That's not fair. granted, we have a citizen legislature, but this task force would assemble key stakeholders that are professionals in this industry, and I believe we feel that this is the most appropriate way to find a lot of these answers, and that it's the legislature's role just to sort of oversee it and monitor and use this important information that's the result of the task force to change our statewide policies legislatively. I think should answer the question.
Representative Munoz.
Getting back to the point that Representative Seaton made, I would like to see this include non-traditional students, and I think the language does specify focus on high school graduating students. I know that we've certainly focused a lot on high school students and trying to increase standards through the GPS program. But I think the purpose here should be broader. I think that we want to look at opportunities for all students, whether they're in their 30s and going back to school or whether they're graduating from high school. So to that end, I support what where you're coming from.
Mr. Chairman?
I
appreciate the comments made by Representative Munoz and certainly your comments as well, but I guess I'm wondering if we are sort of in some way redirecting maybe the mission of the task force as originally seen by the bill sponsor vis-a-vis the book that was referred. And with that, I guess if we could ask the bill sponsor staff to respond.
Sure.
Through the chair, Representative Munoz and Representative Edgman, certainly Senator Stevens is very supportive and concerned about the high level of non-traditional students we have. Part of this task force also includes a component of retention and to improve retention in the college system and to seek ways to take a snapshot of what we have and look at why students are dropping out and becoming non-traditional students, because understandably they do come back. But if we do find a way to improve or decrease remediation, increase retention, then ultimately there will be fewer non-traditional students. People drop out for perfectly legitimate reasons, and there's always going to be a component of dropout and or a component of non-traditionals. And they will presumably come back, and with the new programs that the task force hopefully recommends and we implement, those non-traditionals vis-a-vis those new counseling programs or improved access to financial aid or other things that help them come back and stay in college or technical training programs, there will be a reduced amount of non-traditionals. Does that answer your question? Okay.
And I guess, Mr. Lampkin, I want to get a little further definition on that. So we have a high population of non-traditional students. So is it the sponsor's intent that the task force look at that population? Or is it the task force purpose to look at the career readiness of students who graduate from public secondary schools in the state? Or do we need to add on there and non-traditional students?
I'm sure, through the chair, I'm sure Senator Stevens would be agreeable to adding that specific phrase, but the ultimate goal of the task force is to reduce remediation, increase retention, and increase graduation rates in our post-secondary institution. So that includes both the K-12 system, so they're ready to enter the college or career training, that they do not need remediation once they're in post-secondary ed, and that they remain in school and finish the program. So we're effectively reducing the existence of non-traditionals.
Representative Wilson.
While I was gone, no. Somebody might have brought this up. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Elizabeth, the letter from Elizabeth Downing brings up something that I think is a good point. And if we're going to look at trying to reduce the remediation that we have to do at the university level, then we should have somebody from K-12 on the task force. Because when we have to do the remediation, it's because it didn't get done well enough at the K-12 level.
So you're talking about the counselors?
Well,
We do have,
you know,
Commissioner of Education.
I don't know who it would be, but we've got to have somebody that's in charge of educating kids in K-12.
The commissioner's on duty.
Mr. Chairman.
And I think on page 2, line 12, we have the executive director of the Alaska Association of School Administrators. We have the number 8 there above that. We have the Association of School Boards.
Number 3.
Number 3, the Commissioner of Education.
Well,
but
maybe.
I think that this letter is specifying student
counselors that they are.
Counselors is in job placement services.
Maybe that's enough. That's
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Munoz.
Perhaps to accomplish what you were trying to get at there,
yes,
we could remove on 10 language after readiness and just have that sentence focus. Let's see, an advisory task force on higher education and career readiness is established in the legislative branch of state government for the purpose of compiling data and advising the legislature on matters pertaining to college and career readiness, period. Because, you know, I think there's some discomfort with just focusing on those who graduate from our institutions and not having a broader view.
And Representative Munoz, would you be willing to, so that we had two emphases, just put at the end of that sentence, after it says, from the public secondary schools in the state and non-traditional students as well. So therefore, we have it shown that there would be two focuses, so we would just add after state on line 10 and non-traditional students.
Okay, so keep the language and then just add and non-traditional?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine.
Is that okay?
Mr. Chairman, I'm gonna object to that because you know, I feel we have amended the bill significantly as it is, and I'd like to stay true to the bill sponsor's intent with this bill, and respectfully, for that reason, I think I'm going to oppose the amendment.
And Mr. Lampkin, I'm trying to figure out how this, where the, I wish the sponsor was here, because he argued very strongly in the GPS consideration for including a pathway for non-traditional students. I think that this might have gotten started before mm-hmm. that did, because I can't see that. I mean, I actually didn't talk to the sponsor about this because it didn't come up until now. Otherwise, I would have, other than the mission and the purpose. But the Mr. Lampkin, do you have an idea of where the sponsor would be on this amendment?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, if I understood your proposed amendment correctly, we're talking about inserting the word non-traditional, is that correct, on line 10, following readiness of?
Well, at the end of the sentence.
Yeah, of students who graduate from post-secondary school in the state and non-traditional students.
I think Senator Stevens would be agreeable to that. That would be fine.
I'll remove my objection.
Okay, and so Representative Munoz, you made that amendment for adding and non-traditional students at the end of line 10.
Mm-hmm.
Set number 8.
And that would be amendment number 7.
Okay.
Amendment number 8.
What's that? Are we on 8? We're on 7, yeah. Yeah, Representative Keller's was 6. So is there was an objection that's been removed. Is there another any other objections? Are there any other amendments? Is there further committee discussion?
Yes, one mop up.
Representative Keller.
Much to my embarrassment, I looked down and looked at my amendment, and it says desegregated. I think it was very clear in our discussion that it was disaggregated, but I just wanted to make sure very clear that that goes to the recorder. With the information about the...
On one of the earlier...
My handwritten scrawl there, I wrote desegregated.
Mr. Chairman, what word...
The intent is disaggregated, and that is being able to break up the information into component parts.
Aggregate.
Yeah, disaggregated, and I'm not that good a speller, but I got my iPhone, and I double-checked.
Through the chair, this is Tim Lampkin. I thought when I first saw the amendment, sir, that perhaps Representative Keller would qualify for remedial spelling.
Well, my face, nobody saw it because it was quite a bit after. My face turned red for a full 5 minutes.
I have a question for you.
Yes, Representative Munoz.
One question. Did you have to work this hard on the Senate side when you were going through the committees?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, absolutely not.
Is there further discussion on Senate Bill 221? Seeing none, is there a motion?
I'd like to move Senate Bill 221 as amended with individual recommendations. And is there a fiscal note? Zero fiscal.
And there is fiscal. Yes.
And attached fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, we will move Senate Bill 221 as numerously amended from committee. With attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations. And is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing nothing, we will adjourn at 9. Oh, do we have Wednesday's or the schedule for the next meeting?
Yeah, it's that companion bill to the art council.
Oh, okay. We will be taking up the art council bill. SB 209 on Monday. And so with that, we will adjourn at 10:48.